It's the last Bristol Bay Fisheries Report of the season. We're going to take a look at the foundation of everything we do, community. The Bay smashed expectations this season. The total run is the fifth largest ever recorded. We see how the districts measure up in the last daily run summary of the season. It's Friday, July 31st. I'm your host, Tyler Thompson. Coming up tonight, Chignik's early run of sockeye this year is the lowest on record. It failed to meet its lower end escapement goal for the third year in a row. With commercial fishing at a standstill, the community is struggling to make ends meet.
What is Alaska without fish? What is Chignik without fishing? If all areas were treated this way, would Alaska still be Alaska?
For kids in Bristol Bay, summer is a time to explore, fish, and hang out with friends. But the pandemic has changed summer activities for everyone.
We got fishing poles, and we were taught how to cast, reel it in, but we still miss our friends, though.
Salmon Fest is usually a gathering of activists and musicians at the end of the fishing season centered on Bristol Bay fishing. This weekend, it's going virtual. We hear from one of the festival's organizers.
We definitely had to hit the ground running when we decided to do this. But I think it sort of sprang out of the urgency and the timing of the final environmental impact statement for Pebble Mine being released.
All that and more on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Let's get down to it. Looking at the numbers, the total bay-wide run comes in at 57.8 million fish, the fifth largest run on record in Bristol Bay. Total harvest comes in at 39.2 million fish. That's also the fifth largest harvest in the bay's history. Baywide escapement is 18.6 million, the seventh largest on record. All rivers have met or exceeded their escapement goals. In fact, seven rivers exceeded their upper end escapement goals. Let's take a look at those totals by district, starting on the west side. In the Nooshigak District, total harvest is 8.9 million fish, the fifth largest harvest in district history. It's also the third largest harvest across all districts this season. District-wide escapement this year is 3.7 million fish, the sixth largest in bay history. Breaking that down by river, daily escapement in the Agushik yesterday was 2,900. Total escapement there is at 317,000. That's right in the middle of its goal range of 150,000 to 400,000 fish. In the Nooshigak River, cumulative escapement comes to 1.2 million. That exceeds its upper end escapement goal by about 300,000 fish. Wood River escapement for the season stands at 2.2 million. The Wood also went over its upper end escapement goal by around 300,000 fish. The Tokiak District is still fishing. They caught 12,000 fish yesterday, bringing cumulative harvest to 353,000 fish. Escapement was 15,000, bringing the cumulative escapement to 183,000 fish. That means it's right in the middle of its escapement goal of 120,000 to 270,000 sockeye. Togiak's total run is at 537,000 fish. Looking at this year's totals on the east side, the Naknek-Quijack total harvest this season is 14.1 million fish, the 10th largest harvest in district history. The Naknek-Quijack also recorded the largest total harvest in the bay this season. Escapement is 10.5 million fish. That's the 12th largest in district history. The total run in the Naknek-Quijack this year is 24.6 million fish, the 12th largest run in the district's history. Looking at the district's escapement by river, the Alagnak's escapement is at 2.3 million fish. That's more than 10 times its minimum escapement of 210,000. The Quijack met its escapement goals with a season total of 4 million. That's about the midpoint for its escapement goal range this season of between 2 and 10 million fish. Around 4.1 million fish escaped up the Naknek River this season. That's 2 million over its upper end goal of 2 million sockeye. In Igigik, harvest is 13.2 million fish, marking its fifth largest harvest in district history. It's the second largest harvest in the bay this year. Igigik's total escapement is 2.3 million fish. It's the third largest escapement in district history. That means it also exceeded its upper end escapement goal by about 300,000 fish. In total, Igigik's run is 15.6 million fish, its fifth largest run in district history. In the Ugashik District, harvest totaled 2.6 million fish, its 16th largest harvest in history. This year's escapement in Ugashik District is 1.7 million fish, its fifth largest total in district history, putting it about 300,000 fish above its upper end escapement goal as well. The total run in Ugashik this year is 4.3 million fish, the 14th largest in district history. Now jumping over to our stories for tonight, Chignik's early run of sockeye this year is the lowest on record. It failed to meet its lower-end escapement goal for the third year in a row. With commercial fishing at a standstill, the community is struggling to make ends meet. KDLG's Sage Smiley has this report.
In Chignik Bay, the sockeye run that has sustained the small community for generations is all but gone.
As of right now, the way it's trending, it's looking like one of the worst years in Chignik history.
That's Ross Rennick, the management biologist for the Chignik area. Chignik has two sockeye runs, an early run and a late run. The early run escapement is at about 140,000, barely a fourth of the preseason forecast. This is the third year in a row that the early run has failed to make escapement goals, and this year, the late run seems to be failing as well. The late run escapement is at only a third of its forecast. It just passed 100,000 fish.
Usually the criteria for a stock of concern is 3 years of not meeting the minimum escapement goal. So there is the potential that this early run could turn into a stock of concern.
Those salmon runs are the foundation of life in the region. Ben Allen, a member of the Chignik City Council and a fisherman, explains.
It's hard to write a budget when you don't even know if a fishery is going to exist and how many people are going to be in your town anymore. And what you're even going to do for an income.
Chignik residents are stuck. Even if there were commercial openers, and there hasn't been one yet this season, the nearest processors are a 200-odd-mile journey by boat, an economically ludicrous and dangerous journey.
We can't get the processors to come in here because we don't have enough salmon, and they always tell us, well, we have to have salmon there to open a processor and then evolve it. We're in a pretty tight spot and stuck between a rock and a hard place.
People in the Chignik Bay feel the problem extends beyond the poor runs of the last few years.
There's no potential of a fishery happening if we keep doing the same things over and over again.
Allen is referring to a controversial issue, intercept fisheries. He says the Board of Fish is allowing other fishing management areas to harvest Chignik fish, thereby reducing opportunity for Chignik. In the early 2000s, a Western Alaska Salmon Stock Identification Program study, also known as WASIP, showed high interception of terminal fishery fish in the outer Port Hyden area. Many Chignik fishermen think the same thing is happening with intercept fisheries on the Alaska Peninsula, and that the Board of Fish and state management are ignoring the issue. Ross Rennick, the Chignik biologist, doesn't think that the area's run is failing because of intercept fisheries further down the Alaska Peninsula.
It's really hard to speculate and say they're catching Chignik fish in certain areas, and that's why we're not getting escapement. That's a pretty big leap to take.
Instead, he sees the issue as a combination of environmental factors.
Could be the decrease in Black Lake productivity combined with a nearshore environment. When you get that going on, you know, Chignik's just getting hammered twice.
Climate change only compounds matters further. Several years ago, a mass of warm water near the Gulf of Alaska, known as the Blob, disrupted the ocean environment. Water levels in Black Lake, where the early run fish spawn, have been dropping as well. In response to these events, the Chignik Management Area is launching a three-year research project to study the freshwater environment and try to piece together what's happened to the runs. Research project aside, residents of Chignik Bay are dejected not only about their personal situations, but the future of the community itself. Here's Eileen Ashby, who grew up in Chignik.
It is a very, very big concern, not just for the income and revenue for our village and families. It is our future generation that is going to be hurt the most.
Rachel Allen, another lifelong resident, agrees.
The next generation of kids, they're not even getting the opportunity to get out and fish anymore. And they're basically losing the knowledge. You know, they're losing the skills, losing the tradition, and losing a way of life, you know, for a whole generation now.
Years of poor harvests, feeling overlooked and ignored by state and federal fisheries management, and recent earthquake damage have rattled the community. They hope that voicing their frustrations will prompt the state to act in a way that will meaningfully rebuild the struggling Chignik stocks. Here's Ben Allen.
What is Alaska without fish? What is Chignik without fishing? If all areas were treated this way, would Alaska still be Alaska?
Last fall, the U.S. Secretary of Commerce declared the 2018 salmon season in the Chignik area as a disaster. And this spring, the secretary allocated $10.3 million in relief funding to the community. People can submit comments on the initial draft of the proposed distribution of those disaster funds until August 14th. In Dillingham, I'm Sage Smiley.
For kids in Bristol Bay, summer is a time to explore, fish, and hang out with friends. The pandemic has changed summer activities for everyone. But Dillingham's annual culture camps went ahead with a few adjustments, and a few unexpected benefits have come out of a tough situation. KDLG's Izzy Ross has the story.
Summers are usually busy for Clarence Mayer and his sister Adeline. Clarence is 9 and Adeline is 6. They live in Anchorage during the school year, but their parents are from Dillingham, so that's where the family spends the summer.
Usually going out fishing with their parents.
I've been picking flowers and we've been getting slushies and ice cream.
The summer is different because of COVID, because we can't go to the playgrounds mostly.
Another difference was culture camp. The camps are usually half-day programs for groups of kids. They include activities like making dance fans and yurak, Yupik dancing and singing.
The volunteers and the leaders love culture camp. We love interacting with the kids. We love sharing the knowledge and hearing the stories. And then COVID happened.
Deanna Beyer coordinates Bristol Bay's culture camps for 4-H.
We had a meeting with the leaders and volunteers, and we were trying to figure out how we were going to make this happen with all the mandates from the different agencies, from the communities.
Instead of having kids attend camp, they decided to do something different, sending activities to the kids. Volunteers and organizers put together kits each week. Parents in Dillingham pick up materials for 4 to 8 different projects. They include things like markers, scissors, glue, and instructions. The kids complete the activities under adult supervision. The changes also opened up unexpected possibilities. In a normal year, Beyer says she can only organize camps in 2 or 3 communities. She says this new model extends the camp's reach.
Since we started putting these kits together, we've made contact with several different villages in the region who are interested in receiving these kits. And so we are sending them out into the region for kids to stay connected with their communities and their culture and still have the opportunity to be involved.
Around 40 kids in Dillingham signed up for the 2 distance sessions, which ran for 3 weeks in June and 3 weeks in July. So far, more than 40 kids from 3 other villages have expressed interest in participating. The Village Culture Camp program will be ongoing this year.
It's a rainbow wrap. Blue, pink.
Here are Adeline and Clarence again, talking about one of the activities, a rock painting project.
And pink and yellow. And all around it is just blue.
What about your rock?
Mine is with the sunshine and beach and grass, and then when you flip it over, it's the ocean with sand, just sand.
Whoa!
Wait, can I see? Flip it over.
I think my favorite activity was doing the mask. It says my name on it, and we got to decorate it with this, puffy pink and stuff.
That's Whitney Brown. She and her twin sister, Avery, are 8. They had to finish up the school year at home, and they couldn't see their friends. Some things this summer haven't changed.
We're gonna go fishing with my dad tomorrow, and we're going to see if we can catch a few fish.
While kids like Avery and Whitney might not be taking group trips outside during culture camp, the kits still tie in summer activities like fishing. Whitney says one of the kits includes a worksheet where they learn about salmon.
They have a life cycle, and the fish, they like go to a river and lay their eggs, and then once the eggs hatch, they swim out in the open, and then they come back to lay their eggs.
Of course, this summer is different for them as well. Whitney says the kits aren't the same as gathering with a group of friends.
It feels a little different because you're not all around these kids and you're not like really playing games and doing the Yupik dances and stuff.
What about you, Avery? How do you feel about it?
I feel kind of happy not going to school, but I still got to do a little work, and I've been focused on keeping my room clean a lot and going outside, doing a lot of things outside.
Still, keeping busy doesn't replace friends.
We got our own fishing poles, and we were taught how to cast, reel it in, but we still miss our friends, though.
In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Interested Bristol Bay communities can find out more by emailing Deanna Beyer at alaska.edu. That's D-E-B-A-I-E-R at alaska.edu. They can also call 907-843-0822. Salmon Fest, streaming for Bristol Bay, is going virtual this year. KDLG's Izzy Ross spoke with Satchel Pondolfino, the community organizer in Homer for Cook Inlet Keeper, about the online event.
This summer, we've seen an array of events and festivals go virtual or get canceled altogether. Salmon Fest has not been canceled, but it is going virtual. Can you walk through what you all are planning on Sunday?
Yeah, so Salmon Fest Streaming for Bristol Bay is a three-hour virtual event that will be streamed on Cook Inlet Keeper's Facebook page and shared on the Salmon Fest Facebook page. It'll essentially be a curated show of many Salmon Fest artists that care deeply about our cause and protecting Bristol Bay. And so they've submitted specially recorded videos to us that will be weaving together with different salmon activists and Bristol Bay activists, hosting it live with a few live guests that come through and a live band in-house as well.
You do have an impressive lineup for the event this week. Can you go through a few of the acts and how that's going to be set up?
Yeah, well, our headliner is Portugal the Man, and I think most people know they have some Alaskan roots and care about Alaskan issues, so it's been really great to work with them on this event. And then, yeah, other big names like the Indigo Girls and Rising Appalachia, but also Alaskan names like Hope Social Club and Blackwater Railroad and Sundog, and of course some of the Salmon Fest classics like Tim Easton and Jim Lewin and Steve Poltz, who are all often on the stages of Salmon Fest.
The classics, yes.
Yeah.
I'd like to take a step back. When did you all as organizers decide to not cancel the event but to instead do a virtual festival?
It doesn't feel like that long ago. We definitely It had to hit the ground running when we decided to do this. But I think it sort of sprang out of the urgency and the timing of the final environmental impact statement for Pebble Mine being released. And we knew it was going to be released in late July, and it did just come out last week. So we didn't want that to just sort of fly by without reactivating the base of the community of Salmon Fest. And so we decided it was important for us to pick up the mic and keep going and create something to gather everybody and not just, you know, sort of bring people together with some bad news, but bring people together with, you know, music and hope and inspiration and using those creative outlets as a way to reinvigorate and restoke our community of salmon lovers.
Is activism generally a strong component of Salmon Fest? Is that one of the pillars of what the festival was built upon?
Yeah, well, Salmon Fest started 10 years ago, actually, as a fundraiser for the Stop Pebble Mine, No Pebble Mine campaign. And it's definitely sort of like gone through different iterations. And, you know, obviously the Pebble Mine campaign there's been a lot of different iterations of whether that mine is looking like it's going to come down the line or not. But yeah, it's always had sort of salmon at its heart, of course, and I think in the last few years we've done a really good job of getting more speakers on stage that can help speak to the issues that are really important in our state right now regarding salmon and our salmon culture, and I'd like to think that it's becoming once again, like, more saturated with salmon champions and the sort of the salmon messages that keep us informed enough to make sure that our voices are supporting that salmon culture that we value so much here in Alaska.
Are you all fundraising this summer, or how does that work? Are people going to donate? Is there a fee to enter the virtual platform? What does it look like?
Nope, there's no fee to enter. We wanted to make it accessible for everybody. But, of course, we're asking for donations, and those donations will help cover the cost of the event, but primarily be donated back to organizations who are working to stop pebble mine, including Cook Inlet Keeper, but also specifically United Tribes of Bristol Bay.
That was KDLG's Izzy Ross speaking with Satchel Pandolfino, one of the organizers of this year's virtual Salmon Fest. People can stream the festival from 4 to 7 p.m. this Sunday. For more information, go to inletkeeper.org/salmonfest. We'll be right back to say goodbye on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. And we're back to say goodbye on the Bristol Bay Salmon Fisheries Report. We have with us here Izzy Ross, Salmon Sage Smiley, and Kendra Kapotic. Thanks, everybody, for a great summer. Sage, you're not going too far away.
No, I'm not. I will be moving to southwest, southeast. I'm in southwest right now. I'll be moving to Wrangell and holding down the fort at KSTK.
Wonderful. Kendra, what are you up to?
Figuring out everything in Anchorage. I don't really have a lot going on right now.
And Izzy, what do you think? What did you think fondly of looking back on this summer?
I am honestly just so proud of everyone here. Despite the technical difficulties of this evening, I think we really were professional in handling them. And I think also I'm just really proud of everyone.
How about you, Sage? What did you love about this year?
I liked being able to be here at the station. Last year, I was over on the east side by myself, and it was really great to try my hand at hosting and be able to be here in the office with everybody.
And Kendra?
I'm also proud.
Oh, sorry. I mean to cut you off, Sage.
It's all good.
Kendra, this was your first time reporting ever.
It was, really, ever.
What was it like?
It was definitely interesting and eye-opening, for sure. I learned a lot out of the first, you know, few months I was here, but yeah, I don't know. It's definitely difficult. Props to you guys.
Thanks, Kendra. We were happy to have you here this year to help us out.
We really were. I think that's all. Well, no.
Yeah, sorry. That's all, folks.
Your show, Tyler.
So, as Izzy was alluding to, that's all, folks. The show's done. We'll see you next year, but KDLG's going nowhere. So, see you next week. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.